I'll do this in English, obviously. I'll read the original poems in Irish first. Just across the street here in Patrick Street, under Zarek Shoes, the shop, the Zarek, there's a little piece of work by Seamus Murphy, a little font for a trough for dogs, and you probably didn't even notice it, but that used to have prominent, I think it had a prominent place at one stage. I don't remember exactly where it started off its life, but I don't know, I wrote this poem a few years ago, but I just got angry with the way that Seamus and Trough was treated. And the translation was by Kieran Carson. Madhuri. Nadar anir na madhuri, agus a dang a muhuka, no na mashtri ar an eel, agus a dang a ku, a vien a chaun na graun, agus madhuri a thni, ar an umur elchwehe il hasha chasáin, ach bien merabal hain san air a sool a ishkint sa traid. Na tishi toshte the lucht lapwi, tauntahe fe inog shupa bro. Is bjog a joch madar a shli rish chan a chiaun a hoash dach da nach se fael vash lish an tart nu la hagal a gulihich brog on vinyog an oas ar a valach nu brog ele in a la yere is a gol on vod a kus sa trai nu nevard umur an tumig dan a inche dom a hana charag ar chuig an sail an a chine a ra tigin tu hain kursi maratah Tús agus deire na chud aline an chomhá am aláán a cheard, is chud an tumar gan deir is go scaibhar maríis a go leth braid, madar alta a gaustra go stig osáard, spalta, spalta, dogs. I don't know if it was the dogs he was thinking of with their tongues hanging out, or their masters on the leash of a common language, when with a stroke of wit he carved the word dogs on the limestone trough not 2 yards away from the gutter. But every time I see it in my mind's eye on the street, my own tail stands to attention. He gave the paw-footed race their proper niche, lodged under a shoe shop window where a mutt would find it difficult to dip his muzzle for all that he was nearly dead with thirst, for fear a shoe shop window shoe might land on his head or about to wet his whistle, he'd get one up the backside from the busy shoes that thronged the street. Maybe it's neither here nor there, this trough of drought. It greets me like an old friend that life has turned against, saying, you know how things are. Artisan, the top and bottom of your art is all-encompassing compassion, and your trough with not a drop of water in it makes me grimace yet again as I pass by, a mad dog barking to myself, drink, drink. Portan Fiabri, this is for Piper, a friend of mine, and again, the translation by Kieran Carson. I'll read the translation for the crack first. The Piper's Tune for Peter Brown. A beast strapped to his middle, a dinosaur with metal scales lapped to his neck, backbone of black ebony from Africa, white ivory curving from his arse, big belly under oxter, ribs to the elbow snorting through the nostrils of his nose bag, guldering into the leather muzzle knee pad, air is bellowed into him to hold in check the whole shebang from belly button out. His breath escapes from time to time in pops and gasps. Wondrous indeed that anyone can wrest any kind of music from an animal so prodigiously deformed. He often runs away to his own tune. He has to be given his head the way he blows raspberries at your masterly attempts to coax or tame him with courage fresh or ancient as the May morning dew, the way he has another go at you to test your patience. There's gratitude for you. He's brought to heel with a firm hand pressed to his metal. You must treat him like a wild cat unsnarling a tune from his bass-like belly, or like a stallion of poetry jumping ditches, the piper's tune galloping hell for leather like the universal cavalry. I read it in Irish and there's a part of the favorite. I don't like being limited to translations. I don't believe that's why I ever started writing Irish. I'm a native English speaker, but I believe the sounds of Irish are crucially important to myself as a poet. So, you know, the translations are really just a hint of what the original is always. Part of the favorite. Beisht strapalta in the lore, dinosaur is gani mithil ervnaal. An chnav drama in ebon dov na Africa, in ever ban luba as a horn. An bullock moor fen askelis as lecha, leshen ilin the shade field tish na puil in a frown. Scartan chest of fusachan leher erum loon, a hanan eron, a chimadan an tomalan a stig, on imil khan a mo. Greet lesh an oil of papoil o om gahom, chalin deirig an as, ach a shen tunt a smore ar fad, chol ar bit a wint as anivy chom y chom halash. Shainan she a fort hain gaminic, as catar a chiaun a hurta, mar a bach she shud, a shade a footsa, as nach tut an moshir, a ta a hurt lap a gud a chiaun su, le mishnach cho horsa, ur, le drucht vadin deltane, Is tugging she sharp, elephant hunt, sealer, her pine, shin breakfast, Christel Monier, Athna Lyrica, Avula, Elevital, Allah Shar, Marhat Alta, Adrana Pritch at the Lord, Beish Dule, Nukasul, is fell in the Ferechta, Elaine Tarklacha, is port and fibre gemacht, Cotonard, Le Marclua, and the Ferechta. Are you getting that like in the Irish, or is it working in any fashion for you? Is it working? Sometimes it's very hard to know like if the how the bilingual thing works, you know. But I remember years ago in Dublin in the Project Arts Theatre. There was a reading by a Russian poet, Voznesensky at the time, I remember, and he didn't read any translations, and I remember it was a great occasion because we just concentrated on the sounds, and I think you have to listen to poetry beyond semantics, you know, that's what I believe. I think poetry works way beyond semantics, at some visceral level as well, for me it does anyway, you know. Semantics is only a very small part of the thing, like, but so this is Bunduchus. My brother was fished out of the River Lee about 10, 11 years ago. And he was 10 days in the river, and he was very black when he came out after all the tossing and turning in the River Lee. And this is about my brother, Bunduchus. Dnagrashe Bunkesh the Fane. Rukhish a love and a voss. Yer vis again a bio, egan gonor oskritit and fagra. Eshen vi ko gal in a vion, say o me ko duv, a goss, button hound, got chas na hila kori, an air choral fell on shoals, the verifin. Hain an town, faun, maul, osakun, ern didri du, a head be a bon, the hair choirala. Being gal in the hover ter his hus, agus fragger einshe in munduchus na hastrale. Aboriginality. He answered a big question for himself when he took a hand in his own death. No one among the quick at the open coffin knew the answer. He who had been so bright when young is black now with the gas. He was so bloated with the river, the undertaker turned up the air conditioner in the sultry heat. A slow air vented over him, a didgeridoo tailing the pipes of the conditioning. He turned himself inside out, the answer born from his aboriginal self of down under. The box posted there for anybody who wants one. This is the poem that's in it. This is written a long time ago in the early 90s, at the, when was the first Iraq War? 1991? Whatever, anyway. And the first Iraq War. What? 91. 91, yeah. But the image that's central to this, well, besides the image, the metaphors in it, of course, but one of the abiding memories I had for some reason was Iraqi soldiers in retreat, and they were fireballed by American planes. You know, they just incinerated them on the road to Basra, or retreating from Basra, somewhere like that. But there's a famous war photographer called Abbas, who does a lot of very stark photography in the Middle East, and he gave me permission to use his photograph of that actual scene. I came across it by chance, and he gave me permission to use it. But anyway, I had a place in West Cork at the time, a cottage down there. I was living down there for a good while, down near Bantry, and I suppose one of the things, I was clearing land, you know, clearing a half acre land, and I was doing something very, I was incinerating the ditch, you know, shouldn't have been, but I was. But it's what's done down there, you know, to get to cut back stuff. But, and it was around Easter time as well, you know. So anyway, I'll read this. Beitol is the name given to that actual, when you're incinerating the tops of forests and that land and gorse. Beitol is the name given to it in South Kerry, actually. Beitol. Beitol is Shamahina Kosko, Bio Kushkui, Immortal Round. Ni hold the mosque on than Atten Gaelach, than Atten Galda, a Yale and Dun Lown, Snashola, or Fair Gabian, or Gun Tross of Liana, on Huruk the Valor of Lahim, Saragaham Eregarna, and the Kiaskin in a Vohre, the Sup Fair, the Steezel. Lush Knoid me, Krohus Fosh, Confosh, Afnuri Egan and Blyman, Tugum Gohin and Ea, Dubo, Tichum Queen, a Dublin and Wash, Quick the Slug of Salasrach, and a Mohr of Basra, burning furs. My Easter fires, a living furs bush, burning by a ditch in trees field. I don't know if it's native furs or invaders' gorse that yield before my slasher's blade from root to golden head this time of year. I breathe the honey fragrance, then thrust it on the pile, and a smoke cloud erupts with a fist of hay and diesel. I am an incinerator making room for new growth, but when the flame dies down, the charred limbs left burnt black recall the suddenness of death, bodies swallowed by the blaze on the road to Basra. The next poem is called Cadae in Irish, and it's one of those poems, I suppose, that finds you, you know, one of those poems like that. You know there's something happening and you keep on doing the mundane tasks of life, like, you know, getting up and, you know, putting on the kettle, etc., etc. And the poem tells you what it is when you write it, you know, one of those poems. And I suppose it's to do with the period of my brother's death as well. It's post that, like, it's post the more immediate one that you respond to in the funeral parlour, etc. But it's a more general type of grief. And I think it's probably ordinary grief as well, you know, the ordinary grief of the ordinary day, you know. And most people, I think, succeed in avoiding grief. But I think one of the things that probably poetry does, and other forms of art as well, but I presume that poetry, good poetry as well, deals with grief at a deeper level, you know. Because in my experience, I've always found that grief is hidden behind other emotions, you know. But it's a poem that I sort of, it's a mundane, it's a poem that deals with the mundane and also something very, something else as well, you know. It's sort of one of those poems that I say to myself now and again, you know, if I'm sort of walking and stuff, I say, I'm loath to use the word prayer, but I will use the word prayer. It's a type of private prayer of my own, you know. Anyway, and it's translated by Delante, Greg Delante. Cadet. Pama shomra, bashomra, a fooding tea, a lorra belagan, a snob editicum, cadetain, ugwame, nihin stone roine, on floor garb down, on floor mean bong, kegadogum, a machia, the skugrims, the bayer, a skinin and bulin of on. Nihin laura, vitaleve, must born machine, a slagas worm, kega chassim, make the shelfen, a skavirum tree, a skadem, and mahloin, and an orlar. Ni hé an ochr a bhí muimi, ní rás a dal amach, ní rágas éni a siún, ke gwyl amó siomra, bishomra, a fwyllin tí, a lor bradegin, is na fwake, is gwyl amó dien a brôn, hiún. I don't know the translation of my heart, so what it is, I go from room to room around the house, looking for something, and to be honest, I won't know what it is till I find it. It's not the bread tin, nor the coarse brown flour, nor the fine white flour, so I take them out and measure them on the scales and bake a single loaf. It's not any book I was devouring, if memory serves me correctly, that I put down absent-mindedly, although I stand at the shelves and scan the book stacks and fall to my knees. It's not any missing key. I wasn't going out, I didn't leave anything on, although I'm shuffling from room to room, scouring the whole house for something, and it's nothing, and I'm scouring quiet sorrow. I grew up in Douglas Street in Cork City, and when I was a young fella, there was a polio epidemic in Cork City, and there was no vaccine there at the time. And I remember a girl in Nicholas Hill got the polio, which is about 100 yards up from us, so we hightailed it out of the city, our family, we exited the city. And a lot of other people as well did at the time, a lot of my generation would have done so. I know a guy, he's the city architect in Limerick, and he speaks Aran Island Irish, and he'd been evacuated from Cork to the Aran Islands. And I remember saying, geez, how would you speak Aran Island Irish? He said, I was there during the polio epidemic. So, you know, but I luckily, in one sense, my mother is from Kilmichael Parish in West Cork, we spent a year out there almost, and I went to school in Copeen school, and it was a wonderful place for a young fella because there was no running water and no electricity there, so it was all tilly lamps and shadows and ghost stories and strange accents and women who wore men's clothes and stuff like that, and women and an old woman who used to, without being disrespectful, who used to go to pee standing up in the ditch. So it was a great, like, if you can imagine Douglas Street in 1957, and priests coming down with torches in their hands and saying we'd all be damned, like, and then you're out landed in the middle of the Michael, and it's like landing in heaven, you know, because it was complete and utter freedom, you know. You could go around and mop and put the cow shit all day if you wanted to. And so I actually loved the place, and I think it's left its mark on me, because my uncle was still alive, and my uncle Dennis was a bachelor at the time, and he used to play saxophone in a Kelly band, and he was a wild man. He never drank, but he made poteen, you know. So there's all these contradictions in Irish life and Irish culture. But anyway, so he became my hero, you know. He was like a backwoods man and all that sort of stuff, you know. He's like a guy from I don't know, but he was free himself, you know, and he'd no interest in farming much, you know. So anyway. Kilmichael, thinking on that stuff, no. But it became a locus from my own imagination, I think. It became the second locus. Besides Douglas Street, Kilmichael and my uncle's place in Sligoan became the second locus from my own imagination. So, and my mother was there as well. And my mother's home place. I still love the place. I really love the place. Anyway, Quairon, this is called Quairon, small stand of turf. I read the Irish first. It's basically like about that period of an open fire with turf sods and baking. She used to bake brown bread on the open fire. My mother used it, you know. So it's about that. Quairon, Hooky Cleave, Fuckledom, Madden, among Tinavona, Bacall, Spart, Vold, Dove, Fluch, Bastable, Iron, Hruch. Chiron, Blashle, Yara, Galaxi, Eshin Flu, Gould, the Hine, Ron. Be Sain, a Castle Ruha, a Shade of Gleeher, Asna Willig, Volcan, a Fire Oil Stecher, Suspeher, Asna Mulcan, a V. Ralph Green, Hiron. Dort Mavam, nor Ev Doppel Reeve, Roth, Sahunia, Ach Machine, Mr. B. Hain, Alma, a V. Hossachan, Is Rugoch Methane, Glanamach, as a breen. Is Moon Chirun, the Tinadun Galach, Gan Ligin to Balaska Homalong, the Brach, Gerb Clarine, Clue the Hissachar Lohe, only Hiramish, Achil the Hurbuch the Law. Knag she then a maiden at the Geest around, Kyol the Dinish Gerbshek from on in the Lar, Nulf, the Togam Hain, Rio of the Bakal, a Toch, Charm the Lohe, the Clarine, the Dawn. Small size of turf, but Delante, Greg Delante did this as well as a translation. Small size of turf. One morning she gave me a creel of words over a blazing hearth, baking. Spart for a soggy sod. Bastable for the pot suspended on the crane. Chiron for the embers she set with tongs on the lid of the pan of rising bread. I was Vulcan, turning the wheel on my own, blowing air out of the bellows, firing sparks up into the dark constellation of Slievoen out of the volcano. My ma said she had no other word for the wheel in the corner but machine. She was the first syllable and I was spark, straight out of her womb. She passed on the fire door with love, never let it go down, ever lift the embers out of the ash heap of the night and save them for the next day. She tapped the soda bread with her fingertips. The timber told her it was ready, that the centre was done. Such tips I picked up from her combing the ash dome for the spark embers of a poem. How long are we supposed to read, Paul? Do you want me to give up? Well,
where are you comfortable with reading?
Let's Sorry? See.
Where are you comfortable?
Right.
Okay.
You can tell me to shut up, so okay. I have eye sockets. Where's the original? I don't know where the... I love, when I come back to Cork, I love visiting, you know, like, it's become a very fashionable place now in the market. But there's one particular stall there, and I linger there a long time, which I shouldn't do, but there's a very attractive woman serving there. And
she,
I won't tell you.
we know,
won't she?
We know.
You know from the, you know from the context. I read this down. It's called Eye Sockets in English, but it's called Rigmasool in Ireland. It's really about the sexuality of language to her, I suppose, you know. Anyway, Gleam Soul. Yeah, it's about vowels and pasta sauce and consonants, you know, and all that sort of stuff. Gleam Soul. Pulling a law, a kind lap, a ravioli of his own trophy. A fire in the gutty, glomer, his glow scored near her, a plover of the lepuy. Pouring a law, a stuffer, a lean, a living of the Guthrie, a winner than Tangavyog, a lahanum, lishna dea the lonerche, a miru, a mali. It's far either ihur, it's frisht either ro, and made it a hawker. It's far gumur, ur, pinching, salin, bug veru, ingana, garnoid, a ambru, a laden soul, adherin. I suck it. I spend the day talking to you about ravioli and tomato sauce, gazing at the vowels glazed with throat jelly plopping from your lips. I spend the day stuffing your vowels with herbs, kneading them from your uvula, broadening them with glittering dentals, fingering them in bags. They are better eaten fresh, easy to freeze. Whatever is left over, fresh is better by far. A pinch of salt, simmering, cloves of garlic crushed between our glimmering eye sockets. That's that little poem. And this is, I read the poem in from Michael Hartnett, which is self-explanatory. It's my understanding of Michael as a poet and my relationship with Michael as a poet, I suppose. Michael turned to writing in Irish. He gave up English, supposedly, and he started writing in Irish. So, in one sense, there's two languages in the country that need to be better, are usable as it were, you know. But spiky, I'm not going to any serious language, I'll read the for the crack. I'll read the translation first here, you know. I won't actually. I'll read the Irish first. Why wouldn't I? It's also like a reference. There are references. I think you probably need to have Irish to get the references. It's a very elusive poem in the sense that the stuff in it, like, that alludes to the 18th century poetic tradition in Irish, like the Aisling poems, Egon the Rattler, and they're to do with Michael's translations, obviously, of other poets, you know. And there's stuff there, like, that you get, you know. But it's also I don't know, it's also to do with the I don't like to be regional or provincial in my thinking, like, but there is a Munster literary tradition, you know, unfortunately, like, that's the way Irish has become. And it's a very significant tradition in its own right, in my view, like, and so I have to admit that to myself as well, you know. But it's also, and it's also the fact of Michael's influence, or Michael's Spanish, the influence of Lorca, etc., on his poetry, you know. There's a lovely, he has one lovely image in one of his poems, I think it's Ron O'Sullivan, about the spiked beans and the rose, whirling cock, a rose on their shoulders, you know. And that's obviously from Lorca, like, so that's your rose in the words tonight. Spiked bean, anyway, let's go on to the poem. Spiked bean. Danse se chodrichte. Sorry, you see, chodrichte is. Chodrichte is the title of an Aisling by Ón O'Sullivan, but it also, like, it also means in the translation, in the mist, you know, the magic mist. But it's non-Celtic revival, like, chodrichte. It's also to do with his drinking, you know, his own admitted alcoholism. Danse se chodrichte. Is dynamic hain got crail in a goal, Panara Shamu. Be pillar get it in a cowl, or we shall have a stoon, as well shall I shall see one time in the moon. For sheen it mahan, as lean a creel of heen on spine, to harain on slow roar. For soul ehe on Ulkavan, as we in Lergus glaze, and mine air fine, and got many here too. And stal er alles hier een droogt mocht, brein eigen een stuug docht van een harte lucht. Geen in een spelle, ik er vier okkel, ik hang er zeer bonte, een stakke je roer. Geen elle on levere wille, le bulle, ruhe me winne, ak tis beloer. Pas in een hassel, le boel op me han aard, een staan of in een gatien, on skaal, er een rahoel. Spalpien. This is the language translation, I think. Yeah. He was spellbound in the mist, and the birds named each branch with their music so he wouldn't stray. Will-o'-the-wisp got into his head when he was a youngster and led him through the peaty pastures of Munster. He got a bed in every cabin, his heart brimmed with Spanish wine in the song of the red-haired throng. The owl gave him night eyes and clear insight into every living mite as he wandered the meadows. He chose the scythe first, and the dawn dew trickled down his tightening throat to wet his whistle. Brightness of the scythe gave a cut to the words which he tied and stacked in sheaves. Another brightness from reading the poet distilling him with the rhythm of the blade. He stands in my grandfather's guise, staring from under his cap out of the shade. of both eyes. So I'm going to just finish then with a very small little poem. I was down in the supermarket near where I live, and I'm reading a Japanese poet, Ryokan-san. He's a Zen master poet, but a monk, 19th century. But in one of the introductory essays to him, they call it the poetic mendicancy, and you know, we had a lot of beggar poets in Ireland, but Ryokan was a beggar in the end of his life. And I was down in the supermarket, I was only thinking about it today, and there was these two nuns, they were seeking alms. They were obviously out of an enclosed order, they had the full gear on, you know, and I have a thing about nuns myself, but we won't go into that. Like, but you know, it was fantastic to see them in their full regalia, like, and
they were nuns,
yeah. But whatever response there was, I read this tiny little poem called "Deist," and I even translated it myself as well. Which is unusual for me. Deirt, sight gui a sea, and vert van real to Saint Lawn Aide, creation and down a fad in the lava in Mundeshke, arms, like prayers on chairs, the two nuns in real habits, they gather the world whole in their palms, seeking arms. So, thank you.
How I find it, not with the offensive I find it as well. I find that the Irish is most melodious and sweeter. Mm-hmm. You know, when you read it, English is kind of deadpan then, when you read the Irish first.
Mm.
You know, and you translate. That's my.
It's where it goes, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of the fears, as well. I don't translate my own work, but I obviously work with poets like if they want to translate and stuff by providing them literal translations. But,
a general problem with translating, isn't
it?
We always end up having.
Traduire, c'est trahir in French, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, traductores, you know, all over that. But, and I suppose, I think as well as in Ireland, like that, see, we have a hang up about semantics, you know, we need to understand. We all do it, like, I mean, you know, we feel very self-conscious about the depth of our own Irish, you know, even I do that, like, you know, and as if we should understand the thing better than we actually do, you know. So there's a whole lot of stuff comes up. It's like lapsed Catholics or even people who, you know what I mean, it's sort of, all this sort of stuff comes up, and so, I don't know, translation is very, the only translation I'm really interested in is the translation downwards. Understand?
No.
Translation downwards into the unconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think James Dean said that about Joyce and Finnegan's Wake. It is, for me, I wouldn't be doing this unless I was still interested in that, you know. I'm not really interested in translation outwards, but I am interested in translation inwards, which is, I mean, all of us are translating all the time between languages, I mean, even unconsciously, you know. So, but it's a problematic issue, but I'm not really hung up about it, you know. It's not, but that is my belief. I'm only interested in translation downwards, you know. So, thank you.
Sorry.